the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network presents Vatican Insider with Joan Lewis. Each week, Joan brings you news from inside the Vatican and the Church around the world, as well as interviews and answers to your questions. Now, here's the host of Vatican Insider, Joan Lewis.
Welcome to a new edition of Vatican Insider on this final weekend of October. Some big news stories this week, and I'll get right to those. But I first want you to know that my guest in the interview segment is Father Thomas Merkel, president of the D.C.-based Gregorian University Foundation. This was established in 1972 with the aim of supporting the Pontifical Gregorian University in Rome, and doing this through raising much-needed funds for scholarships, academic chairs, libraries, and capital improvements. We talk about the annual October colloquium, when the foundation's board of trustees and members gather to visit the Greg, as the university is called in Rome, attend a class or two, and meet the students from around the world, men and women, lay people and religious, seminarians, sisters, priests, and missionaries. Father Merkel has some great stories as he talks about what the Gregorian University means to the Church and to the world. So stay tuned for that. And now, the week's top stories. Sunday, October 19th, Pope Leo XIV celebrated Mass for the canonization of seven new saints. He reminded Christians of the need to pray to God fervently and trustingly, even as we face trials and tribulations. The new saints are Bartolo Longo, an Italian Catholic lawyer who founded Italy's beloved shrine of Our Lady of the Rosary of Pompeii, Peter Torot of Papua New Guinea, a catechist, and St. Ignatius Maloyan, an Armenian Catholic archbishop, both of whom were martyred for the faith, St. Vincenza Maria Poloni, who founded the Sisters of Mercy of Verona, St. Maria Troncati, a missionary among indigenous peoples in Ecuador's Amazon rainforest, and two saints from Venezuela, St. Jose Gregorio Hernandez Cisneros, and St. Maria del Carmen Rendeles Martinez, who founded the Servants of Jesus in Caracas in 1965. Monday, October 20th, Pope Leo XIV gave several recommendations to future priests when he addressed the Pontifical Portuguese College, a seminary in Rome. He also thanked the religious sisters who assist the college, saying the sense of motherhood they offer is precious. Also Monday, in the Paul VI Hall, Leo XIV addressed pilgrims who had traveled from around the world for Sunday's Mass and canonization of seven new saints. He described the celebration as one that, quote, reminds us that the communion of the Church embraces all the faithful across space and time, in every language and culture, uniting us as the people of God, the body of Christ, and the living temple of the Holy Spirit. Also Monday, Pope Leo received six members of ECA Global, an international human rights association that works for greater support and compensation for victims of abuse and calls for stronger commitment and cooperation from the Catholic Church. Participants described the audience as an historic and hope-filled step toward greater cooperation. Monday afternoon, as he's done for several weeks now, the Holy Father went to Castel Gandolfo, where he spent the night and most of Tuesday, returning to Rome in the evening. Wednesday, October 22nd, the Feast of St. John Paul II, at the general audience in a rainy St. Peter's Square, but packed with pilgrims, Pope Leo reflected on the resurrection of Christ as an event upon which one never finishes contemplating and meditating. He said the more one explores it, the more one is drawn into an overwhelming yet fascinating light. Jesus' resurrection can heal one of the challenges of today's world, sadness. Intrusive and widespread, sadness accompanies the days of many people, and the Pope described it as a feeling of precariousness which infiltrates one's innermost being and seems to halt joy. Thursday, October 23rd, an historic day in the Vatican for the state visit of Britain's King Charles III and Queen Camilla, who met privately with Pope Leo, their first meeting. Afterwards, the King met with Cardinal Pietro Parolin, Vatican Secretary of State, and Archbishop Paul Gallagher, the Vatican's foreign minister. Discussions focused on environmental protection, fighting poverty, and promoting ecumenical dialogue. An historic moment took place on Thursday when, for the first time in 500 years, the Pope prayed alongside the King in the Sistine Chapel in an ecumenical prayer service led by Leo XIV. In mid-afternoon, there was another ecumenical service at the Basilica of St. Paul's outside the walls, hosted by Cardinal James Harvey, Archpriest of the Basilica. King Charles's visit to Rome revived a centuries-old link between England and the Basilica. Once named, quote, protectors of the Basilica, England's monarchs had that legacy renewed with a new royal chair that was inscribed with Ut Unum Sint, that they may be one. And this has been installed in the Basilica for King Charles and his successors to use during future visits. Cardinal Harvey gave the royal couple a guided tour of the Basilica, where they descended into the Confessio under the main altar where St. Paul is buried. Earlier Thursday in the Paul VI Hall, Pope Leo met with the Knights and Dames of the Order of the Holy Sepulchre of Jerusalem. This took place in the Paul VI Hall, where he thanked them for their humble service to the communities of the Holy Land, where they are called to bear witness that life conquers death. Friday, October 24th, Pope Leo XIV met with participants in the Fifth World Meeting of Popular Movements, pilgrims from Estonia, major superiors of the Jesuit order, and the faculty and students of the Pontifical John Paul II Theological Institute for Marriage and Family Sciences. Well, those are the top stories. Such a busy and historic week for Leo XIV, but now, stay tuned to my conversation with Father Thomas Merkel, president of the D.C.-based Gregorian University Foundation.
Proclaiming the faith, changing lives.
The year was 1999. The shrine of the Most Blessed Sacrament of Our Lady of the Angels Monastery in Hansville, Alabama is consecrated. Mother Angelica says, "The happiest day of my life was the day this church was dedicated."
To learn more about Mother Angelica's life and the history of EWTN, visit EWTN.com/Mother Angelica.
Carry the faith wherever you go. Catch up with the latest news from Washington, D.C., the Vatican, and the world on all of our EWTN news platforms, such as the National Catholic Register, Catholic News Agency, EWTN News Nightly, EWTN Pro-Life Weekly, and EWTN News In-Depth. Download the EWTN app at EWTNApps.com today.
We need to pray for priests that they have courage and strength to be faithful. Pray for bishops who have whole dioceses under them, and they're responsible for everyone. Religious who teach, we should pray for them. Cardinals, our Holy Father, our families, our neighbors, everybody who has a hard time living the truth or preaching the truth. We all need that extra strength of prayer.
Welcome back to Vatican Insider. Here's Joan Lewis.
Well, I want to welcome my listeners to a new edition of Vatican Insider when my special guest this weekend is a friend of recent years, and that's Jesuit Father Thomas Merkel. He's the president of the Gregorian University Foundation. And over the past few years, the university, the foundation, comes to Rome once a year for a colloquium. And it's usually in within the first 2 weeks of October. And I've been part of that in recent years, kind of helping to organize dinners and then having time at dinners to talk to the staff, members, the board of trustees, and so forth. So that's kind of how we got acquainted 2 or 3 years ago. The foundation is very, very special, and so I'm going to let Father tell you about that. So welcome to Vatican Insider.
Well, thank you. Delighted to be here with you.
Well, it's fun. We both have a good time in Rome, but we both work hard too. So
absolutely.
Your week-long colloquium is over, but you know, staff members in the board have have stayed on to take mm-hmm. care of a lot of business, and you spend a lot of time at the Gregorian University in Rome. It's Jesuit run. It dates back to 1551, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct.
Which is also a big number on your website. And I will let you tell us about that, you know. But for people who haven't followed the foundation, don't know about it, just give us a little bit of an overview of your work, when it was founded.
Okay, so a little history of our foundation. We were founded as a not-for-profit foundation in the United States, in the state of Massachusetts, in 1972. And since that time, we've been raising funds to support the Gregorian University here in Rome. Now, it's interesting that probably for about the first 15 years, we did not keep any money in any form of an endowment in the United States, but all funds were sent directly to Rome to support the university.
Okay.
And since...
Because they would know what they need money for.
Absolutely.
Classrooms, whatever.
Yes, and believe it or not, we've been a part of doing all of the above. Scholarships for students.
Sure.
Renovation of classrooms and buildings, support of programs.
Sure.
And
upgrading technology.
Significantly.
Oh, hello. Yeah.
So it's been tremendous. The support that the Gregorian receives through our foundation in the United States is substantial. If you looked at the Gregorian University budget, they get about 37% of their revenue from tuition and fees. A big chunk of their resources come from the Society of Jesus itself.
Sure.
So some of the money we raised in those early years that was sent to Rome to support the Gregorian, that was put in an endowment here. And then the Society of Jesus, the Jesuits, they give an annual gift, but total, the Jesuits comprise about 25% of the revenue for the Gregorian University. And then we are, on an annual basis now, between the dollars we have in our endowment in the United States and the additional fundraising we do each year,
sure,
we are close to 20% of the annual revenue of the Gregorian University each year. And of course then, you know, you've got 25, 20, and 37, so, you know, that's 82,
yeah.
And then there are a number of other ancillary
sure.
incomes. Vatican is a piece because one of the missions of the Gregorian University is the Pontifical Biblical Institute.
Oh, sure.
So the Vatican has always been deeply interested in the connection between the churches.
And the Pontifical Oriental Institute.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I meant to say, if I didn't say, the Pontifical Oriental Institute, they're interested in that relationship
Fabulous.
Between the churches of the East and the Roman Catholic Church.
But, you know, it's interesting because, Father Merkel, that you should mention, obviously, the word endowment, because we talked about that the other night. I remember in this brouhaha between Trump and Harvard and things like that for a while, one figure struck me. My mind can't conceive this number. Harvard has an endowment of $53 billion, that's with a B,
right.
dollars, you know. And the big difference between an endowment at a Harvard or Notre Dame or some other big university in our country and a Gregorian university is, and you were the one that brought this out to me, so many of the graduates that go on from a secular university, you know, they go on whatever their field, medicine, law, etc., and so many become very wealthy people, and they can make bigger donations. But that's not what happens. At the Gregorian, so many of the students, they're missionaries, they're men and women, they're priests, somebody may someday become a bishop, even a cardinal, but that doesn't mean, you know, that you're now in a seven-figure income. So endowment for Harvard and endowment for the Gregorian can be vastly different things.
They're two different things.
Yeah.
Let's just say that Harvard University's endowment is a thousand times larger than ours.
Sure.
And then some.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. So you also, therefore, are going to have different kind of donors.
Exactly.
A different need for donors to understand precisely this difference that we've just been talking about, you know, and the people who love the church, believe in Catholic education, believe in educating priests and missionaries and nuns for the future mm-hmm. of our church, you know, around the world.
Absolutely. And so, you know, the donor that we attract to the foundation makes, in my mind, the purest philanthropic gift.
Right. They do it for love of
education. Yeah, they do it for love of humanity, for mm-hmm. love of the church, for love of their faith, and wanting to see that grow and be enhanced throughout the world.
Right.
And most of our donors did not go to the Gregorian University.
Yeah.
They never sent a child to the Gregorian University, and so they are people who begin to understand, that is, if they've heard of the Gregorian University, if they've heard of it, they see immediately exactly what you said before about the way that the Gregorian University graduates priests, seminarians who become priests, religious women and laymen and women who go out and make a substantial difference in the life of our faith and our church. And part and parcel with that, do not make a substantial sum of money
exactly.
themselves to be able to give back to the school that they love and that they feel gave so much to them.
And they're going to be doing fundraising themselves.
Exactly.
For their diocese, for their parish, for their mission work.
Sure, absolutely.
So it's like, you know, we don't have trees on which money grows.
Right.
My parents would tell that to us as little kids, you know, when we wanted the new toy or whatever. Hey, show us the money tree and you'll get it.
Yeah. Right. Well, you know, and there's this idea that, you know, private business might have that you build a moat around what you do so that, you know, your competition cannot impinge upon you. And it's funny, but the Gregorian University is exactly the opposite of that. There is no moat. And it's to your point earlier where you say the graduates of the Gregorian University go out and serve, but they also go out and fundraise.
Sure.
Too. And but in doing so, they're fundraising to feed the poor, both materially
sure.
and spiritually. They're making sure that their parishes are in good order, that they
well, it's not to buy a Bentley for the pastor.
Right,
like
right,
that.
Right, yeah. That they have that they have money to support their seminary or that their university can thrive. And, you know, interestingly enough, we graduate the people who also are the educators of other seminarians, particularly, and other students around the world. So if you can imagine, you know, 50% of the graduates of the Gregorian University are priests.
Sure.
And these are priests who are getting their licentiate degree for people in the United States. We would equate that to a master's degree, but it's a church degree that would allow them to teach in a university or at a seminary.
Right.
They may also get a doctorate degree, which would allow them to teach at a seminary or a university. But then if you're a bishop and you've sent your men to the Gregorian University and they receive this outstanding, excellent, high-level theological education, and then you bring them back home to your seminary that you've just started, well, then it becomes even more of a challenge for the Gregorian University to find that next cycle of students.
Sure.
So, again, it's very interesting when you think about this concept of a moat, you know, to kind of protect your turf.
Yeah.
We don't operate that way because when we think...
You want people to come in and get to know it and
you
be
want,
part of it.
You want people to come in, get to know it, to receive the education, and to go out and to have an influence.
Yeah.
And so it ends up being this multiplier effect but a multiplier effect that, you know, kind of works against just being the top dog or being the best right. or the best funded institution. So, but it's in service of something greater.
Sure.
It's in service of the church. It's in service of the kingdom of God.
Oh, absolutely. And by the way, we should tell my listeners that the university kind of does have a short name. We who live here, go there, know people who've gone there. We call it, just call it the Greg.
So, yes.
But again, we go back, you know, close to 500 years. And by the mm-hmm. way, 16 popes are among the alumnus. And
absolutely.
Many, many, many bishops. I'm not even sure of the number.
Over 1,200 living bishops.
Oh, wow.
Are graduates of the Gregorian University.
Oh.
And I believe 35% of the cardinals who would have voted in the conclave to vote for Pope Leo are also graduates of the Gregorian
well,
University.
Well, these were very smart men. Allow me to say.
We think so.
Yourself as a Jesuit.
I know think so.
He's Augustinian, but I keep joking with people that, oh, by the way, he's apparently our first missionary pope since St. Peter.
Yeah, okay.
No other pope. A missionary
right.
priest friend of mine told me that.
All his work in Peru.
Yeah. But, you know, he's a MAGA pope.
Mm-hmm.
Make Augustine great again.
you have to trademark that.
That's a challenge. Exactly. But no, it just came up one day. There's so many fun titles you could have with Pope Leo. And I thought, oh my gosh, we might have to wait a bit. But someday I'm going to have an article called White Socks and Red Shoes. You know, the White Sox team from
sure.
Chicago.
Right.
We're not quite at the Red Shoes yet, I think. I think Benedict was the only recent pope to wear red shoes.
Can I tell you a cute story?
Absolutely.
Okay, so last week, we had an audience with Pope Leo. And we had done this last year with Pope Francis as well. But our foundation, we began to give the St. Ignatius Medal to people...
Yes.
who are important for their support of the Gregorian University. And so we were on the steps of St. Peter after the audience and ready to meet Pope Leo, and he came, and of course I said, Your Holiness, we, in gratitude for your support of the Gregorian University, we would like to present you with the St. Ignatius Medal. And then we had a member of our...
The first ever edition of the medal.
This would be, this is the second edition.
24.
So we did it last year
24
in 24.
Was the first one, yeah.
And then
this year in
25. And wouldn't you know that we had a person in our group who had brought a baseball card of the famous White Sox named Frank Thomas. Tremendous home run hitter. And so I said, you know, in gratitude for... you know, your support of the Gregorian University, we'd like to present you with the St. Ignatius Medal. And then we have somebody from our group who wants you to have this baseball card of Frank Thomas. And he he stepped back and he laughed.
Oh.
And was just touched by that gesture as well as ours for giving him that medal. And it was our opportunity to introduce...
But that's what I love about this man, the simplicity of it.
Simplicity.
Absolutely.
And humble and human. And
yes.
Just absolutely delightful. And at the end of it, you know, honestly, given the fact that he's a Villanova grad...
Oh, true.
And we had a few people in our group who have some Villanova roots. But, of course, we have Georgetown. And
A Jesuit, right.
Jesuit yeah. University in Washington, D.C., and we had people from Loyola, Chicago.
Oh, sure.
And, of course, yeah, my alma mater as well. We had a number of people from Omaha, Nebraska, and Creighton University.
Competing religious orders. Yes, right.
Yes, but, of course, you know, Villanova and Georgetown and Creighton are all Big Ten. And, actually,
yeah.
we had a young man who joined us later who was from UConn. But we had all these people who have some affiliation with Big East basketball, and
oh yeah,
it's kind of funny, but we'll compete on the court. But you know what? At the end of the day, we all share.
Sure,
we all share a common faith.
That's the beauty of it for sure. Well, you know, we've been talking about endowments and fundraising and how to help the Greg. Right now, with the meetings that you have, because you also, while you're here, the colloquium and everybody, you kind of attend some classes, you spend a lot of time at the university. But what has come out as some of their top needs now financially?
You know, one of the greatest things for the university is the support we give them for student scholarships. The university will give out over $1 million each year. We are at least 75% of their
scholarship
program. So we started a program several years ago when one of my predecessors, Father Alan Fogarty, was the president. Alan started the Pope Francis Adopt a Scholar program. And that program is basically a full support for a student to study at the Gregorian University. And that may, or that does, I should say, include their tuition and fees and their room and board, wherever that may be. And that can all be accomplished for about $25,000 per year.
Amazing.
Isn't it?
No, when you look at, I mean, some state universities, much less private ones in the U.S., they've got to break the back of a family.
I think you'd be hard-pressed, even at a public university, to receive the high-caliber education you receive at the Gregorian University for that price tag.
Yeah. That's all the time we have today, but come back next weekend when I continue my conversation with Father Tom Merkel, president of the Pontifical Gregorian Foundation. He has so many great stories and a lot more information about what the foundation does to help Rome's Jesuit-run Gregorian University.
For more information on these stories, or to check out Joan's blog and to ask her a question, go to EWTN.com. That's EWTN.com. Thanks for listening to Vatican Insider on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.